Thank you very much.
That's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. You write that we need to start education reform by answering the question, what is education for? So how do you answer that question? What do you think is the purpose of education?
For me, it is important to be clear what education is all about. It's easy to take it for granted. There are a lot of arguments around education, and often they're rooted in the fact that people have very different ideas in their mind about what it's all being done to achieve. There was a philosopher called Walter Bryce Galley who once said it's what he described as an essentially contested concept, like freedom and democracy. People think they know what they mean by it until they start to get down to the detail, and then they realize they mean different things. So I do say in the book that education should be about helping children and young people understand the talents that lie within them and to help them become fulfilled individuals and compassionate and productive citizens. There's a twin focus for me in education. One of them is to help people discover who they are, what they can be, what their talents and interests really are, as unique individuals as all of us are. But also you want people to be active and productive in the community and in the larger world. And it's on that basis I go on in the book to talk about, therefore, the sorts of education that we want. And what I also say is, of course, if you want something else out of education, then you try and be clear about it too. And then we may at least know what we're arguing or disagreeing or agreeing about.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like how you're saying we're going to get there is by bringing creativity back into schools, by not educating creativity out of kids. Is that the core of how we get there? And how are you defining creativity? It's not just art class, right?
No, well, creativity is both a real proposal and it's an operational idea. And I spend a bit of time in the book explaining why that's true. But it's not all that the book is about. It's also a metaphor for a way of thinking about education in a couple of ways. One is that the basic argument of the book is that education should be personalized and not standardized. What I mean by that is that all people are different. I mean, obviously we have lots of things in common, but every human being is unique. Every child is different. And one of the things I think all parents want for their children is that they should discover who they are and what they're good at, and therefore the things they might go on to do and the kind of lives they might lead. The current culture in education, especially I might say in the US, and I do live here now, I'm not just popping over here to have a chat about it, I've lived here for 15 years, current culture of education is dominated by the demands of standardized testing. This has become a multi-billion dollar industry. Schools and teachers will all tell you that, and parents will complain about it too, that their kids are spending far too much time in school either being tested or being prepared to be tested or being debriefed on testing and suffering the consequences of not having tested properly. In other words, the dominant culture of education is not about personalizing, it's about standardizing. And the result of this culture of standardizing is that we're seeing higher levels of disengagement among kids. We're seeing higher levels of kids not graduating from school, of people not knowing what to do next with their lives. So this isn't just a romantic or trivial argument. I think it goes right to the root of what we want education to be. And when I talk about creativity, I mean engaging people's curiosity, developing their capacity for fresh thinking, and also being creative in how we organize schools themselves, being innovative in how we put the day together and how we improve the culture of schools.
Okay, so the standardization. In the recent weeks, kids just finished standardized tests. You know, is that one of the first steps to do away with some of the standardized testing?
Doing away with some of them is a very good idea. And I'm not arguing against all forms of testing. If I have a medical exam, I want some standardized tests. You know, I want to know what my cholesterol level is compared to everybody else's. I don't want it given to me in some idiosyncratic scale my doctor invented in the car. You know? So some forms of testing in education, as any other field, is of course worth thinking about if it serves a constructive diagnostic purpose. And that was the intention, I've no doubt, of No Child Left Behind when it came out. But it's not how it's actually turned out. Before No Child Left Behind became law, I think on average kids going through school might have had three or four tests of various sorts, diagnostic tests. Now it can be 14 or more in some state. So I'm not saying let's get rid of testing at every stage or in every area, but let's get it into perspective. It's not point of education to be tested. If it serves some diagnostic role, then that's fine. But the result of the current mania for testing has been, firstly, to push everything else to one side. I mean, so you now see schools which have pretty much dispensed with arts programs, recesses being cut back, school days are being lengthened, play is being pushed to one side in elementary schools. physical education. Kids are spending day after day sitting at desks. If you look at some other systems, one of the most successful systems of education, by all different measures, is commonly recognized to be Finland. And they started reforming their education about 40 years ago, but they didn't go down this route of standardizing. They went around the route I'm describing, of customizing and personalizing. They do very, very well on all the international measures, but they don't have any standardized testing at all. You can run very successful education systems without testing people day and night.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of customizing and personalizing education for very different kids, how practically do we get that to work? Because I think we hear from a lot of principals and from a lot of teachers that they're spending so much time putting out fires and trying to keep a large classroom of kids all behaving. How do we both engage the kids on a one-to-one level while making sure everyone isn't in trouble or hurt or something else?
Yes. Well, the book is full of examples, as you know, Amanda, of exactly that. We have examples in every chapter of schools who are doing exactly what we're describing and with improved results all around. I mean, for example, there's a school called Smoky Road in Georgia, and the school principal, Laurie Barron, when she went to the school, it was in a difficult area. Parents didn't want to send their kids there. The achievement levels were down all around, high levels of truancy. In many ways, it was dysfunctional. And she said she spent the first year, almost using the exact phrase, putting fires out of giving kids notices for truancy, doing home visits, trying to get the kids to come to school again. It was a mess. And test results were right down. There was common fighting in the school. She said she spent a lot of time jumping over desks and breaking up fights. And she realized that the only way to deal with this was to recognize that kids actually do want to learn. It's their lives. They want to make the best of themselves. And the only way they were going to solve this was not by punishing people, not by excluding them, not by giving them more tests, but by treating them as individuals, as they actually are, and trying to create a different culture of collaboration in the school. So over the course of the next couple of years, they went to great lengths to understand each of the kids. They worked with them individually. They connected with their families. They tried to discover what it was in each case that motivated them, what some of the issues were. And of course, some problems in schools are not created in the school. They're brought into school every day because of the circumstance in which students are actually living. So it's not right to think that all the problems that schools deal with are being created by school. Schools are dealing with things that show up through the doors every day. But they are dealing with them, so they have to think of how to deal with them. And in the case of Smoky Road, all the faculty and the staff and the principal got together and they made it their business to get to know these students. She said if there's one student and music was her thing, but she wasn't being able to do enough of it, so they let her do more music. And another kid, who she said was a statistic waiting to happen, had an absolute passion for football, and so they let him do more football. They said, look, if this is what matters to you, this is what matters to you, so you're going to be able to do that. And over a relatively short time, an agreement was reached with the kids where they thought just implicitly, well, if you know this matters to me, well, I'll do more of what matters to you. And discipline problems started to decline. Attendance rates went up. Achievement went up. And at the end of this process, 3 or 4 years on, Laurie Barron was recognized as the MetLife Middle School Principal of the Year for having helped to create this school with a waiting list of parents who wanted to send their kids there. It was a complete reversal. But it didn't happen by doing more tests. It happened by personalizing it and customizing it and recognizing this is a community of real people, that there are conditions under which people give their best and conditions under which they don't.
Right. There was a line from her story that really stood out about how you can get anyone to do you a favor, but you can't get a group to follow a mandate.
That's right.
Seems to fit.
Yes. And I suppose that's the point I want to make here, Amanda, is that what we're trying to do in the book is to empower people, parents, teachers, and school principals to recognize that there are things they can do within the current system and that politicians should not see their job as trying to direct everything from the top by more and more mandates and more control mechanisms and punishments and penalties. They should see their job as encouraging growth from the ground up, which is where education actually happens, and giving people conditions where teachers can do their job, where principals can do their job, where parents can become involved. But it happens at both ends. So the book is really an appeal and I hope an empowerment to people in schools and communities to know that they can make a difference. And these are examples of people who are doing that.
And I imagine our role is very different, whether we're, you know, a politician or a parent or a teacher, a student or someone even completely outside of the education system
Yes.
who just cares. So what are...
That's right.
You know, some of the main things that you're asking us to do.
Just as people who care, do you mean?
Yes.
Well, I've seen whole communities turned around because there's a vibrant and creative school in the middle of it. By creative, I don't just mean people doing arts programs. I'm a big advocate of the arts, but I'm talking about people doing interesting exploratory work in science, in technology, and having innovative sports programs. Creativity is the real pulse of achievement in most fields. I mean, we live in a world that human beings have created through ingenuity, you know, through technology and through the arts, the sciences. Human beings are inherently creative if we give them the opportunities. And there's an analogy in the book with farming, and it's not a fanciful one either. You know, if you're a gardener or a farmer, you know you can't make plants grow. They grow themselves. What you do is create conditions where that will happen. You create a climate where that will happen. So it is a collaborative effort, and it's why we go step by step in the book. We talk about the nature of learning and how kids learn best and what we know about that. There's a chapter on teaching. The role of teacher is to help people learn. So what does that involve, and what does great teaching look like? There's a chapter on principals and what their roles can be. There's a chapter on the curriculum and what we should teach, a chapter on better ways of assessing people, what the roles of parents are and the roles of policymakers. But throughout the whole book, there's an emphasis on partnership, of seeing education not as some custodial sentence where kids get pushed off to a private facility for 8 hours a day, but one that should be open to collaboration with the broader community. So there are lots of projects that we talk about in the book where students, particularly in middle and high school, working with local companies or cultural organizations, where adults other than teachers are coming in and running workshops in the school and maybe learning alongside the kids. See, a lot of things that go on in schools are habits. They're not the result of legislation. They're just the result of custom. And they can be changed. We invent institutions. We can reinvent them. And if we reinvent them in the right way, we actually do better on all the conventional measures than if we just stick with the old formula.
Mm-hmm. So I think people would agree that we need to work together. I think that more exploration is great. We want kids to find out what they're good at. But there might also be some people who wonder, if we just let kids look at where their curiosity takes them, how do we make sure that they also learn some of those things that they really need to learn, but that no one is going to find all that fun?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Amanda, because, of course, that's not what I'm arguing. I'm not saying in the book that kids should just follow their nose and do what they like. Actually, there's some schools that do argue that, and eventually, you know, they have great success, and we talk a bit about those in the book as well. But you're right, I believe that there's some things we need to learn in common. But engaging people's curiosity and creativity meets both interests. If you want people to really engage with science and maths, for example, or with history and humanities, you need to pique their interest in that. That's what great teachers do. You need to cultivate the appetite for learning, whether it's about the world around you or the world within you, and that's really what the book's about.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Amanda. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me on.